Ahoy, hoy, friends. Welcome to a special edition of The Salon. We have a landing party ready to go to talk about gay panic at the disco, queer representation in Star Trek Discovery. I also want to start by thanking Strange New Pod, the Dura Sisters, the whole crew of podcasts that are part of this festival. The last days of disco sadly are upon us, we are excited to be part of this festival to talk about queer representation in Star Trek Discovery. Some quick notes. Let me go ahead and pull this down so we can see everybody. Hello, everybody. We've got my co-founder Trev and two of our saloners, Will and Joanne. How y'all doing?
Good.
We are a little late starting the recording because in proper queer fashion, we were gossiping and on our own queer time and just ready to get started, ready to talk about it. Earlier today, I made the interesting choice to put out to Twitter a question about how people feel about the queer representation in Star Trek Discovery, and everybody was chill and nobody was weird at all. Lots of great comments and thoughts, some interesting commentary, only a few people that I had to block for turfy bullshit. Oh boy. I love Star Trek Discovery. I love what they're giving us. I love what they're doing. They're doing different things. I've got my criticisms. We're going to talk about it. I will say up front that I don't think current Trek is as progressive for our time as 90s Trek was for its time. And 90s Trek was a bit of a mess in this regard. But what they did end up doing, I do think in some ways was a little more progressive than what we're seeing today. We're going to get into it further. But as always, if you've seen The Salon, and please do follow us at USS Salon on Twitter and Blue Sky. We're at Salon Trek on YouTube. You know that we never start the conversation before we set an intention.
You are correct, fearless leader, as always. So to set an intention tonight, since we're talking about queer representation in Discovery, I thought it would be fun if we widened the conversation just a little bit and talked about all of Trek just for a moment. So fellow Saloners, what queer coupling did we never see that you wish we did see? And you can choose from all of Star Trek. As usual, I will begin. Some of you may have heard this before, but I think Nella Darren and Maresta Yale was the lesbian couple that Star Trek deserved and never got. They could do fun queer science together. They could have a kid if they wanted to, probably just one, and she would be hella smart. And they have more chemistry between each other than either of them ever had with Jean-Luc. So with that,
you know, you've said this before.
I know I did.
Such a random pairing. We've never fully talked about it, but I want more of both of them. But yeah, it's an interesting choice.
Yes. Well, perhaps we could do an entire episode about
queer fanfic of Maresta Yale and
Darren. We'll read the Darren Yale family.
Anywho's, since you spoke up to make fun of me first, well, you get to go first after me.
Well, joke's on you because I already thought about this answer. I know it messes the episode up. I fully understand that it goes against the episode, but I needed more Riker and Soren. Like, I needed that pairing together. Like, there's something about it where I think there could have been a lot of mileage. I understand that this was, you know, the 90s, this was not going to happen. But if that was that's the queer couple I kind of wanted to see. I found their relationship very interesting in the episode because I rewatched it in anticipation of this because it's one of, we had a very heated discussion on The Salon about this episode. But me and Trev sure did. But I would have loved them. That would have been a fun if suddenly Soren was on the Enterprise for a little bit, and then they have another episode where they go back, like how we figure that out. But I would have loved to have seen that relationship fleshed out a little bit more.
And I think we all know Deanna would have been cool with it.
Probably. Totally. At that point.
Couples counselor, Deanna Troi.
Oh, that would have been a very special episode of TV.
That would have been a very special episode. Joanne?
So, I have two. I think the obvious one for me is Jake and Nog, right? I wanted them to get together. Oh. For sure. Like, adorable. I would be sweet, right? And adorable. Like, you know, and just pure, genuine they love. They kiss.
On the promenade, loitering.
Right. Well, at their spot, missing. Right on their spot.
Right, hanging over the promenade. Come on. That would have been great. But my random pairing, kind of like yours, Trev, is I wanted Loxana and Pulaski to get together and kind of be Troy's two moms, you know, because we meet Pulaski kind of taking just such good care of Troy, you know, the child or that, what was it called? And, you know, and being and listening, you know, they loved Deanna differently, right? And it just would have been Troy's great moms. I just think that would have been incredible.
And then Kestra would call them Grandma and Dr. Grandma.
Dr. Grandma, that's good. I love that.
Dr. Grandma.
I accidentally made it cuter.
Right, make more fanfic. Do it now.
I'll be right back.
Well, I'm gonna ruin it with mine because when I think about it, I'm gonna sound like a.
Is it just thirsty?
Well, but not in the right way. I'm gonna sound like a cis straight teenage boy. I'm thinking Deanna and Tasha. I'm thinking Kira and Jadzia. I thought
you were going to say Kira
and Seven. Like those three pairings come to mind.
Kira and Jadzia was what I thought you were going to say, but I never thought about Deanna and Tasha. And it's kind of I don't know. I can see that couple happening. That works.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, that's good. I like that.
It would kind of also redeem Code of Honor a little bit, right? In that whole little conversation. And Tasha, like, you know, because Deanna totally tricked her. Like, I know you're into him, right? Yeah.
Not the worst thing about that episode, but yes.
That would have really changed the flavor.
That's what we were focused on.
Not to disagree with a black woman about Code of Honor, however. Ooh.
I'm surprised none of us said Garrick and Bashir. Like, that would have been fun.
Well, that's canonical.
Yeah.
I mean,
we've seen them touch. We've seen the looks.
That's true. Mm-hmm. That's true. The gif of Garrick putting his hands on Bashir on the shoulders. I use that a little bit too much, to be honest.
I do have thoughts, and we'll get to it later. I do have thoughts about Cisco and Mirror Bashir. We'll get there.
We have to wait till his next fanfic is published.
That's right.
Prime Cisco and Mirror?
Prime Cisco and Mirror Bashir.
Okay.
We'll get there.
Okay.
And Jadzia, that's a throuple that happened.
Joanne's going to co-author that one. She get off fanfic. Oh my god.
My erotic fanfiction.
Lovely intention setter as always, Trevor. If you want to see nonsense like this, please do follow us at Salon Trek on YouTube every Thursday at 6:30 p.m. Pacific. When new episodes are out, we review that episode. In between new episodes, we have lots of different fun content. We've done what we call thumb wars, where we thumbs up or thumbs down the episodes of a season of Trek. We just got through Star Trek Deep Space Nine a few weeks ago. We're currently in the middle of doing deep dive reviews of each season of Discovery. If you're watching this live, today will be Friday, the 29th. We have a Salon episode that aired last night as of you viewing this. This is hard. I've heard podcasters try to do this. It's challenging to get the tenses right. Yeah. So as you are watching this, if live or if on Friday when it airs at Strange New Pod, just yesterday, we will have completed our Star Trek Discovery. We re-watch deep dives with season 4. Lots of fun stuff coming up. It's 10C. Yes, please. Thank you, Trevor, for that title. And speaking of queer representation in Star Trek Discovery, let's get into it. I'm really excited to talk about this. I've got lots of thoughts. I know you all do as well. We talked a little bit ahead of time about what we want to talk about. I think the first thing is really just framing this conversation in the way that Star Trek tends to exist overall, which is we've heard creatives talk about it this way. We've talked about it this way. Lots of other podcasts do as well. Star Trek really is a product of its time. The original series is very 1966. The original movies, TNG, is very 80s and 90s. So on and so on. Each new iteration of Trek is a product of its time, and the queer representation within all across is pretty reflective of that time as well. And so I figured I would bum us all out by starting about where we are currently in the real world, at least a snapshot of the United States and why queer representation is more important than ever, because we exist, we are not going anywhere, and we should be in content, in media, we should be anywhere and everywhere, because we are anywhere and everywhere, and that should be as respected as any other relationships. So I happen to, in my day job, work for an LGBTQ plus rights nonprofit. We put out reports every year about the state of legislation, amongst other key impacts within our community. What you can see on the screen here, in 2023, we had 253 pro-equality pieces of legislation be introduced. Only 50 got signed into law. And sadly, worse than that, in 2023, over 571 anti-equality bills were introduced, and 77 were signed into law. These are things like bathroom restrictions, book bans, telling doctors what they can and cannot discuss with their own patients with regard to gender-affirming care and other medical practice. It was one of the worst years. And unfortunately, as you can see from this map from the ACLU, 479 bills have been introduced just this year. And you can see there are states that have over 16 anti-LGBTQ bills in their state legislature. Some luckily have none. A few of these states, I'll talk about Arizona real quick. We luckily, because I'm from Arizona, we have a really strong pro-equality governor there in Katie Hobbs. She's already vetoed pretty terrible legislation, and she will continue to do so. But unfortunately, our community is under attack across this country, and it's not unique to the United States. It's happening all over the world. I can speak to it a little bit in the U.S. because I happen to live here, happen to work in it a little bit. It's rough. And for me, as a cis white man who happens to be gay, but able-bodied, living in California where I have protections, working for an organization where I have protections, I'm pretty safe. I'm not completely safe. I'm still vulnerable. But for people who don't look like me, who don't sound like me, it's really rough out there and it's scary. And when you're looking for an escape, something like Star Trek being that safe place to see yourself is always a beautiful thing when it happens. And I'm really excited that it happens a lot more in Star Trek Discovery than in other iterations. But we will talk about, you know, the peaks and valleys, as it were, of that. And so I just wanted to frame this conversation with, you know, where we are in the world, at least that snapshot, and why representation matters. And with that bummer of a starting point, who wants to kick us off about queer representation in Star Trek Discovery?
I will do it.
It's better in 2256. That's the point, right?
Yeah, yeah. I think if we're talking just generally about Discovery, I think this is the queerest, obviously the queerest Star Trek we have in just generally. I even think compared to the other series, I think it's still the queerest one, and as it fucking should be. So, but I will say that Star Trek is making up for lost time. And it does feel like the queerness that is represented here, in my opinion, my personal opinion, is about 10 years late, 10 to 20 years in some instances. Like, it does feel like Star Trek should have been making these bold stances in Voyager, in Enterprise, having queer characters on the bridge, be openly queer, have queer relationships, make this stand here. And now it feels like because we have... many of us have moved past this. Some of us have regressed, unfortunately. As progress happens, this kind of rubber band effect sort of happens. Things snap. You pull forward, it snaps back. You pull forward, it snaps back. And I think that Discovery, I think, makes a strong stance having Stamets, the first openly queer. If we're not talking about specifically Sulu in the Kelvin Universe films, shout out. But I think that they are making up for lost time. And I think the representation here feels about two decades old, in my opinion, where they are commenting on the person's queerness. It's not normalized. It does feel like sometimes it's very central, and it does feel like it becomes, in some ways, as we see later, some of the other characters that kind of evolve and come out of the series, the representation is more of a I'm showing you this, instead of just letting me experience these characters and just accept them as they are and normalize their behavior and their existence. It does feel like I'm being handed something. But I will say that having characters, queer characters in Star Trek, especially once we move into the future and we eventually Star Trek Discovery ends up in part of the posterity of Star Trek and becomes part of that beautiful universe we all experience, I think queer kids seeing this, it's going to make a huge impact on them. And I think just because I'm old and jaded and have lived through all of this shit before, I think that it affects me differently. But like, I sometimes think about what little 5-6-year-old William would have seen, what he would have experienced and felt seeing Stamets, seeing Adira, seeing these characters, experiencing them, seeing the relationships between Stamets and Colburn, seeing that, I wonder what that would have, how it would have changed me. But I appreciate it for what it is. I just hope the next, you know, when we get another series eventually, that we move to the next phase of queer representation and normalize their behavior where we're not talking about it. They just exist as who they are.
And I think the normalization question is a really, or distinction is a really important one, because I think some of the tension that we feel is about intention, right? I think in the earlier iterations, the intention was there to really, we support this and we want to introduce this because this is important. I will say that the current iterations, while they're important, they feel more kind of reactive, right? Or just kind of descriptive to the culture and saying, well, you know, everybody else is talking about it and maybe we should too. So because the intention, I think, is at odds, it's why we don't feel so sure about it, right? But I agree wholeheartedly with you, Will, that, you know, the representation is just so key, you know, not even only for young people, but people who are kind of in the middle or the ends of their lives, but never really thought about themselves in these terms and, you know, and what it means to be, you know, to have gender identity or sexual identity or orientation and all of those questions. It gives us a new framework and a new language that's really important, I think.
Yeah, I agree with all the points said. I think as someone who saw himself significantly represented by Stamets, in that it's almost too literal. He's a very, very pale, very nerdy, sometimes bitchy white gay yeah, guy.
Trevor's an asshole. Get into it. Trevor, I love this.
Trevor's an asshole, everybody. That's what he's saying.
Absolutely.
Married to an incredibly kind and incredibly bright, incredibly hot man from Puerto Rico who works in healthcare. So you combine us, and the representation is a little too spot on.
Wait. Was Brian Fuller in your home? Do you know Brian Fuller? How did he create these characters?
Being an early subscriber to Paramount Plus meant that they could watch everything in my home. No, it's a little too spot on. So I love and appreciate the representation for all of the things that it is and for what it represents for me as a person who fell in love with Star Trek 40 years ago and didn't see myself until I saw Stamets. But the issue that I have, and it's going to sound like I'm being thirsty, and I'm not, I swear. But where for all of the queerness, there's a little bit of hesitancy when it comes to being sex positive. And we have... The scene at the mirror and the brushing of the teeth and the talking before bed was fantastic in all of its ways, and I don't want to take anything away from it. But in four seasons, we've not gotten a single shot of them waking up after a night of pet. Like, it doesn't have to be Star Trek porn. It just needs to just show them having just had sex, or show them about to have sex, or show them something.
Fuck. It's streaming. It's streaming. I mean, paying.
We got Klingon titties. We got Klingon titties.
First one of the night at 21 minutes. Brilliant. So, but in all seriousness, we had no problem showing Emperor Georgiou, engage in a threesome. Like, that was fine. We had no problem showing them.
All three of them are hot, but
why is the married couple not in any way overly sexual? I mean, I love that they love each other. I love that that conveys. I love that the friendship that's very apparent between Wilson and Anthony translates through the relationship of mm-hmm. Paul and Hugh. But it would be nice if they weren't covered from neck to toe every time they're together.
And in Burgundy.
Burgundy is beautiful. How dare you?
Is it? All right.
I love it. I want those pajamas. This is another thing. Quick aside, Paramount, you leave so much money on the table. The Starfleet pajamas should have dropped that day. Come on.
As much as I'm saying I wish I saw them not in them, I'm also admitting that I would have bought a pair the minute that they were available.
Yeah, I'd be wearing them right now. They'd be my after work clothes. I'd be wearing them immediately. Yeah, just right now.
Yes. Under the city, 100%.
Those toothbrushes, that's a partnership. Come on.
Exactly. So all of that is to say that as inappropriate as the imagery can be in my mind sometimes, in practical application, showing their sexuality beyond the fact that they are just in a partnership would be nice. We've seen so many positive facets of their relationship, including how they processed losing it and how they brought it back together, and that they clearly feel as though they are supposed to be a family and that they will fight for each other. Show me that they're also hot for each other.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like just pulling this back up again, they're a beautiful couple, and I like what we see, but I agree. I think it's it feels like it's for the straight gaze, not homosexual gaze. They feel like a couple that are I think they've only kissed twice in all of this.
They're kind of neutered. I think of them as neutered. It does feel like they are, I can't speak to being in a relationship. I can't speak to it, but it does feel like they are, I don't know.
They're respectable. You know,
it's very safe. Yeah, it's kind of that idea of the respectable gay. It's like, oh, there's nothing affronting of them, but it's like.
They're fully clothed while in bed together.
In bed. I doubt either one of them wear a long sleeve t-shirt to fucking bed.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. Please. Like,
is it cold on the ship? Like, I don't think so.
I don't think so. Like, you can change.
Although there is an open. There is an open flame in the lounge, so maybe it is cold on the ship.
Maybe yeah. It's frigid all the time.
Right. That's Zora, like,
they never like close the. They never close the shuttle bay, so the ship's just cold all the time.
Fair enough.
I don't know,
we haven't mentioned this yet. We've talked about it before. I can't remember if we were live yet for this, but I think it is worth mentioning that all shows are subject to network nonsense, studio notes, etc. One reason why I highlighted all of that legislation earlier is because we do know GLAAD is really good at monitoring this. There is a correlation with representation in media and how elected officials operate in certain ways. And I think part of the problem with having all of that hateful legislation is it suggests to these studios, oh, we need to be safer. People are upset about this. And the real culprit is money and power. You know, why are I'm trying to keep the nonprofit hat correct. Why are the anti-equality crusaders just the last couple of years freaking out about trans people, particularly youth, particularly kids just trying to be kids and play in sports? It's because there are real problems in this country that they have no interest in solving. Pay, inequality, healthcare, education, all kinds of nonsense. Everybody's struggling. How can they keep power? How can they raise money? We got to demonize some people. They demonize trans kids and trans people in general, LGBTQ plus people in general. And seeing this legislation, these studios can use that as an excuse to give notes to these creatives, be like, you got to tone it down. They can't be too queer. They can't be, unless it's a very queer show.
The really sad part is that some of that played out in the comments from your post regarding this recording.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And
I was gonna say, it does feel like there is a definite reaction to their relationship in the series, because it does feel like it does get pulled back quite a bit. It was very central to the first season. It felt like it was very prominent and very open. You know, we'll get to the kill your gays part, but like I do feel like their relationship was very prominent in the series at that point, and it does feel like as we've gone on in further seasons that we have lost that relationship between them. And I thought was so important important to their characters. And it does feel like you get a handful of idiots on Twitter or whatever commenting about this, about how they don't want to see a gay person on TV. But like, I think Star Trek has always been a series that was both brave and courageous. So I think there's a difference between that. Being brave is to fight for someone else, to stand up for something and to put yourself on the line. And I think being courageous is to show who you are and to be vulnerable. And I think that Star Trek in certain times has been both of those things and should be as a mirror to our own society and what we could be in the future. And I think that the executives surely had to have come down and said, pull back on this, mm-hmm. because there was a handful of idiots on Twitter and who have something to say about people's bodies and who they love. And of course, flooded comments and said things that were hateful, but like a handful of hateful comments should not dictate the way you treat an entire group of people. Mm-hmm. Like absolutely, it frustrates me because I would have loved to see the relationship progress further. It just doesn't seem like it's gone anywhere since maybe season two, and we've got three more seasons after this, and I just don't feel like their relationship has really, like, we get the introduction of Adira, and I think it feels like the writer's handing us a fix me baby, like, mm-hmm. I hate the idea of that with this character who deserves to stand on their own and be the non-binary representation that we need from the series, but like, which I would say is the most progressive thing they have done, yeah. is hand that off. And I think that was an incredible step forward, but I think it's, none of us are going anywhere. We've been here for hundreds, if not thousands, if not tens of thousands of years. And they keep digging up Neanderthal bones of same-sex partners who were treated the same as their heterosexual counterparts. And they act like that's not going to exist in the future.
Yeah.
Bitch, please. Everyone's going to be pan in the future. What are you talking about?
Yes. Like, the future is pan.
The future is pan.
Period. Like, pots and pans, girl. I'm so sick of this shit. I'm so sick of it. Like a couple of old dudes in suits fucking telling us how we're supposed to live our lives. I'm like, girl, retire. Go away. No one cares
Which is the answer to the question of the misogyny in showing Georgiou being openly sexual and clearly
which is
either
fine.
Pan or bi. But we can't show the two men who aren't including a woman in their shenanigans. And we you know, God forbid we show.
Like, I don't remember that. Was it a guy and a girl or two guys?
A guy and a girl.
It was a guy and a girl, and Georgiou.
That's the 80s.
I watched it a few times.
It's like lesbians are cool. Lesbians are not lesbians. They're just women who haven't met the right man yet.
But yeah,
like,
it's for the male gays.
Lesbians are cool, but like, oh no, two dudes. If it was two guys, God forbid.
Yeah.
You know, I know Georgiou would have two dudes.
The devil's three way.
Three dudes in there. Yeah, the
I'm sorry. I love that it's two dudes and a woman is called a devil's three way. I think it's hilarious. Call me problematic. Cancel me.
I'm calling you problematic. Push the button.
Fair. To the devil.
God, to the devil. I'm left-handed. That's the hand of the devil. So
yeah.
And I'm gay.
So this is perhaps a good segue into one of two directions, both things that we want to talk about, the mirror universe or the kill your gays trope. Two fun topics.
Why don't we kill our way to the mirror universe?
Yeah.
Oh, there we go. That's fun.
It makes sense. That's super fun. Yes, let's do it. Let's kill our gays. No, let's talk about the kill your gays trope. And yeah, so we mentioned studio meddling. Discovery, as it's well known, had a rough behind the scenes go of it. Their first season, they lost a showrunner. Their second season, they lost showrunners. Their third season, they had their new showrunner, but they were jumping ahead and completely changing things. Season four, COVID hit, so like, They've had a rough go of it behind the scenes in a lot of ways. However, they wrote that Dr. Culber was going to be killed, and immediately took to Twitter and the after show for the first season to say he's coming back. Don't worry, he's coming back. So why do it? Why do it in such a gruesome way? Why show it? They showed it in the recap. They showed it in flashbacks. So many times, like I'm not an overly sensitive, like everything needs a trigger warning, but like give us some trigger warnings at the front end and like don't give us the trauma porn all the time. Like it was gratuitous that like not only that they did it, but that they re-showed the neck snapping so many times in subsequent episodes with the recaps and the flashbacks. Someone else talk about it because I'm getting.
I mean, it's reflective, I think, for me, of kind of just, you know, the pervasiveness of kind of white supremacy, right, in this country. They always want to do this, you know, surround different bodies with trauma, you know, and only understand them in relation to, you know, being broken and divided and somehow not whole. It's that, you know, that very white male gaze saying, you know, this is how I look at the world. And, you know, it's just, and I don't know, on some level, it's probably not a conscious decision, but it's so problematic, right? And so disheartening and so discouraging that you only understand different people in the context of trauma and pain.
Mm. That's we the only time that they're
relevant. Yeah, we should pity the fool, but yeah. It's the only time that it's relevant, you know?
Yeah. I can feel sorry for this person and have empathy because they're going through this trauma.
Instead of just they're people, right?
Yeah. It's like how a lot of Republicans can't be bothered to care about anybody until they're like Rob Portman became for LGBTQ rights when his son came out. That it's not the only example, but not worth getting into further. But like, yeah, empathy for others is just lost quite often.
I struggled with the violence of it. It wasn't just that he died. If he had died heroically or had died in some, like, and then they brought him back, but like that he was murdered so violently and audibly. And then with the constantly having it in the last time on Star Trek Discovery, working on my voiceover work, that we just kept seeing it over and over was almost, it was almost like an attempt to desensitize it, like not intentionally, not suggesting that that was some sort of scheme on the part of Paramount to, but there was like a desensitization taking place by constantly showing it over and over and over again. And I was like, I knew that it was, I didn't realize it was affecting me or bothering me until I saw Wilson and Shahzad post on Instagram a funny picture of the two of them. Like Shahzad was like hugging Wilson from behind with like his hands like affectionately around his neck. And I was like, oh my God, that actually warms my heart for some weird reason. Like it shouldn't have affected me the way that it did, but it did because I was like, damn, I've watched this neck snap like 4,000 times now and it's bothering me.
Yeah.
I wonder if they thought they were being, kind of calling attention to, hate crimes and that sort of thing, but because they don't have people appropriate places to play it out. Do you know what I mean?
I would love to give them that amount of credit, but I didn't. Yeah. Yeah.
I was trying.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. I could see it, but if that were, I feel like if that were the case, they would have said so, and the execution was definitely off for sure. It felt unnecessary. It felt like a symptom of the seeming mandate in season one. And I liked season one. We talked about this a few weeks ago. I even on rewatch, I liked it even more than when we first watched it, and I liked it then. But it felt like another of like, this is not your mama's Star Trek moment. It was like, we're doing things differently. And I like when Star Trek does things differently. I don't think we need to stick to the formula all the time. But this was just, it felt unnecessary and gratuitous. And the fact that they backtracked so immediately, it kind of felt like, well, then why even bother doing it? If you're gonna do something, stick with it, have a reason for it. But it's just a weird thing to me. I'm not in the industry, but it just seems a little odd that to have this like, hey, we're gonna do this thing, we're gonna film it the day that it broadcasts. We're gonna have you two go live to talk about how it's not really gonna stick. So you know it's weird, like. They knew. So why do it in this way? And it's because they that was the story they wanted to tell. I understand that, but it's just too much. This was just too much. I have a banner for this.
It was too much.
It was too much.
This upset me, and watching it again upset me more. Because this is why I said that I felt like Star Trek Discovery is about 20 years behind. Because this kill your gays trope is about 20 years old. Mm-hmm. It's a constant thing where like gay characters can only be perceived in media through the lens of trauma. Like very rarely is a gay character seen where they're not some bitchy person, this caricature who has this flat, one-dimensional, shrill, or someone who is a product of trauma, specifically surrounding their families, surrounding either like the way culture perceives them. Most of the time they're participating in sex work, which is real work. Shout out to my sex worker friends. But like, or like disease through AIDS. Like it's like a constant thing. And like to see it in this show was upsetting. And the way it happened and the violence and the kind of graphic nature in which Culber is killed is upsetting, because this was something that they were like, oh yeah, we'll figure this out. But then on like outside of that, it was almost for nothing because we didn't see Stamets grow from that as a character. Like, if you're going to kill off Colbert, fucking do it. Do it and leave him dead. I don't think it was necessary for the story. We could have had him in a coma. We could have had something else happen. It could have been any number of other things that would have had the same effect, that this person snapped and attacked Colbert. It could not have been a neck snap. That was like the most shock value thing to do. But the Stamets character doesn't really change. When we get into season two, he's like, oh, he'll be fine. We'll get him out of the, I see him in my dreams. We'll pull him up from mycelial network. But it's like, it was such a like, oh, we fucked up and people did not respond to this the way that we thought they would have. And absolutely was stupid. And the backtracking was like, we have to fix this because, again, a moment where we criticized, but then the bringing him back seemed a little like we have to figure out how we're going to do this to kind of fix a problem. But then to bring him back and the relationship not evolve did feel like that was all in service of kind of just a shocking moment and nothing else. And like seeing that constantly play out where like, it just doesn't feel like queer people exist. We only exist under the lens of trauma in some way. It has to be something about like I come from a very privileged space and I am aware of that privilege and I wish others have it. Like I did not have to come out to my family. I'm a very, whatever. This is the future I want for people. I don't want them to have to come out. I want them to be able to exist as they are and their families to accept them and move on and not have to have a big, you know, when I talked to my mother about it, finally, she was like, your siblings didn't have to come out as straight. So that's the end of the conversation in terms of that. They just want me to be happy. And to see the constant trauma and the constant coming out of characters in media, which I understand that we're normalizing this, but to see it in a show that's supposed to be about the future, I want to see that just these people to exist and be happy and not have to have this song and dance where it's like, I feel like a writer's going, see, we represented you. And I'm like, I don't want to see that. Like, tell our story, but like, it doesn't feel real. And this was like so hard to watch because I was like, I felt almost betrayed by the thing I loved. I felt like a spouse cheated on me. I'm like, oh, fuck. Like, come on. We got to do this. Like, I remember sitting on the couch with my brother watching, and I just groaned. And he, like, looked at me. And I was just like, ugh. Like, he didn't really understand because he's unfortunately heterosexual. But, like.
It's not his fault he was born that way.
I know. No one's perfect. But.
Listen, as long as he doesn't,
he saves people's lives.
As long as he doesn't just rub that lifestyle in your face, it's fine.
He did try it once. We won't need to go into that on the
okay.
But he did try once. Then I turned it on him. He wore khaki cargo shorts with a gray t-shirt. And I went up to him and I go, I know you're straight, but you have to rub it in my face. And then he never did it again. So we're fine. We shared a room until I was 14. We're fine.
It was a teachable moment.
The only way he knows is when I drag him to death. But he has short hair, so it's harder to grab and tug. But he didn't understand that. And like to get back to the actual point. it was frustrating to see because it felt like the thing that I cherish and the thing that I loved and I hoped we got queer representation from. And like in my brain, I'm very the anti-headcanon of the salon. I felt like in my brain that like the headcanon was they never commented on it. Exactly. That like queerness existed in a space where it was so normalized. No one said anything. No one had to comment on it. Everything was just cool. Like everyone existed and was happy and had partners and no one said anything.
Like Schitt's Creek. The world of Schitt's Creek is very that.
Yeah, exactly. So it did feel like I had a spouse that had like cheated on me in a way because like it was like, this is going to do this to me too. Cause how many times have I watched a horror film where the queer person is the first one killed off or they died of AIDS in the movie. Or like I watch a movie about queer love and it never ends up with they're together and happy. So there's always a trauma surrounding it. So it just makes, I feel like I'm personally constantly fighting the kind of gay trauma that lurks in the shadow of my life, and to see kind of Star Trek Discovery, which at the point was the queerest, it is the queerest Star Trek show we have, to kind of like
snatch it away.
It was hard in rewatching it and being more like preparing myself physically to see, like emotionally to see that, and then seeing the payoff in season two, I'm like, we're gonna have to fix it really quick. It's like, you made that bed, fucking lie in it.
Yeah.
Like, I needed to see Stamets deal with that death. It just felt like we didn't. If you're going to do it, then do it.
Yeah, they glossed. It felt like they glossed over it. Dr. Culber had a lot of really lovely growth, but it was from literal death. He grew from dying. And like,
it felt manipulative. It felt to the fandom. But not only to the fandom, I realized that on rewatches, I started getting angry at them putting Wilson and Anthony in the position of being this couple and getting to celebrate it in photo shoots before the show even came out. I mean, I have a magazine with both of their autographs because it took me 2 years of convention stalking, but I got their autographs on the magazine. But to then put them in the position of promoting it, and then they can't say this horrible thing happens to my character and it's incredibly traumatic and will remind all of you of stuff that you've seen before, when they're this beautiful couple that should just be able to be happy and encounter problems. Like, they don't have to be happy every episode, but like, just leave them alone. Like, let them get naked and let them be.
Let them fuck. Speaking of letting them fuck, now that we've killed a little bit, should we hop through the looking glass? Talk about the mirror universe, queerness in the mirror universe. I want to kick it over to Trevor first, because I know he has some thoughts on this.
I have thoughts. They're kind of lonely, but no. I have heard and have agreed with a lot of conversation around sexuality and queerness in the queer representation in the mirror universe. Always being sort of let's demonize bisexuality, let's make, you know, everyone's evil in the mirror universe, so they're naturally bi. And I have a theory that Discovery either intentionally or probably accidentally addressed this with Georgiou and giving us a little bit more of an insight into her sexuality. I think the reason that we think that is because all that we've been given up to this point is very minimal information about the mirror universe, but Discovery gave us something that allows us to take it a few steps further, which is that in the mirror universe, sex is not an expression of love. So I don't think everyone's bi. I think there is a greater fluidity with regard to sexuality because sex is about power. Sex is about manipulation. Sex is about getting one up in the mirror universe. So people more comfortable.
Not just here.
Not just here.
Mirror universe.
Not just in Southern California, Stan.
Sex is about manipulation.
Wait. Is this the mirror universe?
Are we
the mirror universe?
Are we in a transporter accident?
You didn't say we were going through the looking glass. No, so, but in the mirror universe, sex isn't about love. It's about all of those things. So the fluidity, it's not about them being bisexual. It's about them using sex for different purposes. And in that, being comfortable being more sexually fluid, you're not going to say, well, I can't seduce that person to get one up on them because I'm not attracted to men/women. It's, of course, you're going to be comfortable doing it because you want to get ahead, or because you want to murder them after you're done, or you want to do something evil or nefarious, because it's the mirror universe. It's not about love and how we define sexuality. Their sexuality is more fluid because it's an ends to a means to an end.
I love this theory. I think in universe that is right. I think in real world, tacky people be tacky. I think that in the 1990s, they wanted to see some hot women be next to some other hot women and kiss and Nanon and Nicole, etc.
They wanted to kiss, or they wanted to kiss?
They wanted to kiss. And then they kiss. And listen, I am as gay as they get. Like on the Kinsey scale, what? I am straight up gay. But
that's news to me.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah. 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 Shock of shocks, everybody. He's gay.
So in 50 minutes, you decided to come out.
Yeah. I wanted to talk about this to finally come out of the closet with you guys. No, I've been out since I was 15.
Last closet.
But
girl, she's just a rack of clothes in a room. She's not a closet. There's no closet to be found.
She's like a rack.
She's a closet. That's good, Trev. I'm gonna steal that. That's good.
Yeah.
Oh
my God. Yeah. That's
a
fair.
Clothing rack in the middle of a room.
You know, it's funny. I was thinking about this the other day in preparation for this. Like, it is funny because some of us don't need to come out, but we really do. And I think there's an important note here. Like, coming out isn't a one-time thing where, like, queer people are constantly coming out in new situations, meeting new people. And that's why the conversation can get kind of exhausting with regards to why do you need queer representation? It's because there isn't enough. Like when this show came out, I remember seeing straight white men being like, "Oh, well, I guess this show isn't for me." Like, you motherfucker. If I can find something to enjoy in a show that has no gay people, heaven forbid you do that for this show that happens to have a couple of gay people, that a cis white man is not the center of attention for a few minutes. And by the way, Lorca was still there. Then Pike was still there. Like, get over yourselves. We literally have most of media. Like, white men are fine. But getting back to the point, in the mirror universe, I like that in-universe notion that they're using sex as a weapon, and they're more sex positive because it is a weapon for them to use. I would like to see if we, I don't always love Mirror Universe episodes. They're kind of fun, but then it's overdone. If we end up in the Mirror Universe in the future, I would love to see less of it, less of the sexy stuff, and more of the sexy stuff in the Prime Universe. Like, let's show the full spectrum of sexuality in the Prime Universe. They do have the hotter costumes, if we're being honest. That feather cape that Giorgio had in season 3, yes.
Fierce.
Gersha also, Phillips is incredible.
You just made me realize I want to amend my answer to the intention setter when you mentioned Lorca and Pike back-to-back.
Speaking of back-to-back.
I earned it.
That was too easy.
I know. That's good, though. God, that would be fun.
Heard that line before.
Ooh. All right, should we head
drink?
Back?
Are you gonna tell me what you were you gonna amend your thing? Are you gonna take a drink, Chad?
Oh,
that's my amendment drink. Yeah.
Should we head back to the Prime Universe, or do we have other thoughts on the Mirror Universe queerness?
I'll keep it brief. We talked about it. It does feel like the bisexual is bad. It's like I get it. Yeah. Like the in-universe like headcanon, I think that makes sense. I'll buy it. But like it does feel like the they're bad about it. It just it A lacks flavor. B is like a little like hokey, like kind of tacky, but not in a fun way. Not camp, just like ugly.
It's offensive.
Like yeah. It's just like going into someone's home and they still have like the mid-2000s Tuscan design in their kitchen. You're like, Diva, you're still rocking that? Like, ew. Like, it's just that, again.
I'm sure we have offended a whole portion of the community with that.
People have dropped off.
To tell you, you're getting bonus points for somehow talking about a range hood and including it in a conversation about disco queer representation.
Tuscan, thank you so much about the mirror. Fine. Yeah, everyone in the mirror universe has a Tuscan kitchen. Mm-hmm. that idea of like, oh, the having non-straight sexual encounters somehow is inherently bad because the mirror universe is depicted as evil, whatever. So like lumping that together is also annoying. It's like, oh, is this out of their character? Fine. But like that character is also evil. So like you're placing that out of character attribute under the idea that these people are inherently bad. So like it just, you're framing queerness and like non-heterosexual intercourse specifically as like evil. So like, but also it's like, we still doing that? Like, come on. Like, it just, it's a little tired. We've seen it before. Like, it worked in DS9 only because like Nana does it for me, but like,
yes,
sorry, Nana icon, but like that it made sense for that character for some reason to have like sex being a weapon. It felt like that was what she did. It felt as a part of that character. It didn't feel like it was like, oh, we have to do the opposite. This person is really straight-laced and very conservative in the Prime universe. So in the Mirror universe, they're an abject slut and will fuck anything. It's like, I don't, it's
like, yeah, the slut shaming of the Mirror universe is a little much. As a wannabe slut, I'm in a bit of a dry spell for a couple of months, but as a proud slut, I take offense.
You're not a practicing slut.
Before we leave the Mirror universe, two quick things. One, can we Bajoran clap for an Anna reference?
Intendant.
Thank you, Nana.
Thank you. This is where I wanted to mention my Prime Cisco and Mirror Bashir rendezvous. It should have happened. It should have been a way of Prime Cisco getting information out of Julian. We know that Julian was having, you know, Prime Julian was getting some with Garrick. So let's explore the pansexuality of Mirror Bashir, because we clearly have at least a bisexual Prime Bashir. But let's explore it with two of the hottest people on DS9.
Yeah.
Well, we did with Nana. So we already
said what I said. It's a fair point. You're right. Yeah. I didn't mean to.
What he said.
Nana, wherever you are, I'm sorry.
I will say Dr. Bashir is a creep. We've talked about it, but Mirror Bashir could get it.
Is probably a bottom.
I shouldn't bottom shame making that a.
It's not shameful. Me just saying it out loud was potentially thirsty and problematic.
Yeah. He's a yeah.
It's fine.
Yeah.
Joanne, I'm so sorry.
Joanne's like these F slurs pulling me into their nonsense.
Joanne, if pressed, could easily rattle off all 114 contestants that have ever appeared on Drag Race because she is perfectly comfortable with gay men talking about gay men.
Oh my God, there's like 200 and something now.
Absolutely. You don't want to see my browser history, and that's all I'm going to say.
Problematic ally now.
It counts. Give it to her.
It counts.
Do it now. In the
arms of the angel. Congrats, girl.
That's so funny to me.
It just works.
I literally made that. It was so stupid. I love it.
Oh, God. All right, enough foolishness. Let's get back to the Prime Universe. So, are they? Are they not? Listen. I could not find a good, like, there are so many images of the two of them. I could not find a good one through quick searches. I even like Trekcore is great with their screen grabs. Mostly, there are a few interesting moments that they don't have a good screen grab of, but trying to find them was rough. I just ran out of time, but man, Owoshikun and Detmer, like goals first of all. They're both beautiful. They're both great at their jobs. They're clearly in love with each other. And like I said before, and I'll say it forever more, I just want somebody to look at me the way that Owoshikan looks at Detmer. That's love. And it's beautiful.
As much as I don't want to take away from the romantic love aspect, but like I just want you all to consider a Laverne and Shirley type Star Trek sitcom with Owoshikan and Detmer.
Oh my God.
Sure.
Are they going to work at a factory? I love that.
Yeah.
They're going to work at a replicator factory and they share quarters together.
Yeah.
Who would be Squiggy?
Reese.
Rom. I was like, Yarek.
We shan't speak negatively of Lieutenant Commander Reese. My discussion.
That wasn't negative. Well, yeah, I Squiggy. Yeah,
Squiggy? Fair enough. Come on now.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. I'm just trying to include Reese. I'm trying to include Reese in a lot of things because
the fact that Patrick Kwok-Jun didn't block me when I told him he was my disco husband is
that,
just
that's
all
an
the,
ally.
That's yeah, an ally right there.
That's ally. Yeah, that's allyship. Thank you.
The fact that he put up with my inappropriate self on Twitter and Instagram. And maybe
listen, I mean, yeah, I mean, if we want to talk about inappropriateness with fans and Star Trek actors, I think that is probably a zero in the 0 to 100 scale of shit that they probably have to deal with quite a bit.
You're probably right.
Yeah.
So what I'm saying, I guess, is objectify him more. I don't know.
Anytime we talk about that, I just remember Transporter Twink and I'm just like, I felt that. If that was me, I'd been like, hell yeah. I don't know this actor, but like that was like also love, but like love.
Yes. Yes.
So can I get us on topic? I know I'm not normally one to do that, but I'll do it.
Which topic? It depends on which topic.
The Detmer,
listen, if you want
the literal one we were just doing. As much as I would love them to be together, I love that they have a platonic love for each other. Like, I think as a relationship like that with two people who really admire each other, who work so closely, like I, as a homosexual, do have a platonic friend who I feel very close to her. And like, I have platonic friendships with people that I don't have sexual feelings for, but like that are men and queer and gay and all that. So I love that they have their friendship kind of, I feel like sometimes friendships in TV shows sometimes are a little, sometimes in Star Trek just generally seem a little surface, like, mm-hmm. like as much as Geordi and Data, like in TNG were so close, or you think they're so close. I never got the sense that they were, that their friendship was more than just like coworkers, mm-hmm. like they do, you know, live and work on a floating hotel, but like I do.
It's the same with Tom and Harry. It was very surface level friendship.
It just seemed like buddy buddy, but it feels like Detmer and Owoshikan. Like I can see how someone would interpret that as that being romantic, but I think having that kind of relationship, specifically between two women who are often sexualized and often made to be that this is often pushed into like lesbians in territory, like them being sexualized, I think them having this relationship, I think is like, now that we're talking about it, I think is one of my favorite relationships. Like, yeah. I think that the two of them working so closely together and the way they do kind of rely on each other and their friendship does seem like, if I was to insert headcanon, would be them like hanging out regularly and spending a lot of time with each other and like having a really close bond, but just being like two people who were like, sitting on a couch watching TikToks, if that survives the 32nd century. But
this
like
is,
that's the
this
kind
is
of
where
thing I
No, I was just gonna say sorry, I just wanted to interject and say I this is one of those I'm finding myself agreeing with you more and more. Because I think it's the kind of intimate friendship we don't see much of, and because they don't make it explicit, it lends itself to, well, are they or aren't they? Thoughts versus like if they made it explicit that, you know, one of them has a boyfriend or some other way of saying like they are not banging,
a case of the not gays.
But no, they just have a very intimate friendship that I think is something that's missing in a lot of media, because like I've only had one boyfriend. It was 8 months did not last. This was 6 years ago now. But I do have a lot of intimate friendships, not friendships that I am intimate with, but like deeper friendships. It's not just surface level, like, oh, let's go talk to some chicks in the holodeck, kind of like Tom and Harry style from Voyager. Mm-hmm. I would love to see more of that, where it is a deep bond. It's not sexual, but make it explicit. Because in this case, I think the way that they don't give them much, and this is a bigger thing with Discovery in general, because the main characters are not the bridge crew. That's a completely separate conversation and has been had ad nauseum. But with those two in particular, we see more of them together. And so it one is naturally curious. And so to make that friendship more explicit, I think would have done them a great service.
I think they've developed it with each passing season. I think it, mm-hmm. I think things tipped kind of after the season 3, when they were blowing up the with the dots and the and she's carrying the oxygen thing, and and they all come back and they're like, you're alive. And then season 4, I feel like they were making it more kind of explicit, like maybe they're exploring something or whatever. But I think it's kind of progressed. Like season 1, I think they did just have kind of deep affinity, and affection for each other. And then with each sort of event, each passing season, the nature of their relationship has grown. Mm-hmm. Right. So, I don't know where it's going to land, but I too like the notion of it remaining sort of vague and having people sort of wonder, because I think friendship is deeply powerful and an incredible sort of model of relationship and love and trust and intimacy and all of those things. And I just wish was appreciated more. But it's also kind of nice to see the possibility, right, of these two women loving each other in every way possible.
Yeah. But also, wouldn't it be wonderful if at the end of season 5 we found out that both of them do identify as queer but have just a platonic friendship?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because talking about queer representation, like, that is one thing that we don't really have, is two queer people who are friends. I mean, the Salon is a bunch of queer people and a bunch of allies supporting them, and the friendships are, I don't want to disparage heterosexual friendships and somehow insinuate that they're not as deep as ours, but queer friendships.
Not as deep as ours.
Oh God!
But there is, despite our difference, despite our different upbringings, despite our different experiences, there's a commonality and something that brings us to discover the discovery of the discovery. No, that brings us together in a way that would be cool to see played out in Discovery. Because we've seen all of these other queer relationships. We've heard reference to Reno's late wife. We've seen two men married. We've seen a non-binary young person incorporated into this chosen family. It would be cool to see two queer women who just happen to be incredibly loving and wonderful friends.
And they have boyfriends.
And then they kiss.
And then
I'm kidding.
Yeah. I'm making a tired joke about queer women having boyfriends. But listen, I do happen to know, like, off the top of my head, 5 or 6 women in relationships with men, but who still identify as bisexual or lesbian. And that is true to their identity. They just happen to be in relationships with men. I am not one for bi erasure. That is not what's happening here. Just let that awkward moment land.
There it goes.
Wow.
Like Discovery in episode 2 of season 4.
Great segue. Speaking of awkward, let's talk about some other aspects of discovery queerness that we haven't talked about yet. The chosen family is a theme in a lot of Star Trek Discovery, particularly seasons 3 and 4. In season 3, we got the introduction of a trans actor and a non-binary actor, both playing characters who are trans and non-binary. We've got Jet Reno was introduced in season 2, but all throughout we've had this theme of chosen family, particularly with the Stamets Colbert Tal family. I couldn't think of how to hyphenate all of those names quickly. Let's talk about it.
When I view a Star Trek series, they kind of in my brain boil down to a single theme that kind of not moves the entire arc of the series, but like majority of the stories take place there. Like we talked about TNG, I think, being about family, DS9 being about worship, and Voyager, I feel like, is about home in some regard. And I feel like Discovery, I think, when I look back on this series, is going to boil down to chosen family, which I think something is so nuanced. And it's like, as the queerest this Star Trek show, I think, to quote our president RuPaul, we as queer people get to choose our family. And I think that we see that idea of chosen family kind of be brought up. I wish it would be maybe discussed more, like their kind of fish out of water moment coming from the 2250s into the 32nd century, what that means for them, that they're all they have. They're 900 years in the future. I can't imagine someone from the Byzantine Empire showing up on my porch and understanding how to use a cell phone. Like, I can't imagine that. So I think when I look back on it, I think the show has done a really good job of talking about what a chosen family is. Sometimes I think it's a little maudlin. It's a little melodramatic at times. But I think on the whole, I think it discusses it in a way that I don't know very many shows really, they're not tackling the subject, but I think they're really holding it close in terms of when they talk about the story and the crew and what that means to them. So I appreciate the show for that. I do wish sometimes it didn't feel like it was, you know, so melodramatic on occasion, but like seeing that, and as a queer person who was chosen the first time around, oh God, don't even get me started. But like, but as a queer person who has chosen, who's fortunate to have their own biological family, but has chosen to create a family, who has a chosen family around me, that like seeing that played out in Star Trek, I think is really important. And the show does a good job of like highlighting that. I think sometimes I was entirely sold on the Stamets, Colbert, Adira, chosen family moment. I love that idea that they've took
a little rushed,
a little bit, and it did feel like they're like, "Oh, you're the queer kid. Go with the queer kid."
Right.
So it did feel like that.
Like the next episode, he's like, "I'm a father." Like, no, actually, you're not.
That is a teenager you live with. Like, it's hardly your child. But I do refer to my dog as my biological child. He did speak to my boy. But same. Like, so I seeing that kind of like how these people have chosen to be around each other, I do appreciate a lot. I'm going to leave it there before I say something else, but I'm going to leave it there. I do appreciate it. And I think when we look back on this and I think about what theme centers Discovery, I think it is chosen family.
Oh, I agree. I think this is the theme they do the best, because it does kind of play out on every level from, you know, even though they're in sort of a romantic relationship, it resonates with me every time when Book, you know, put his arms around Michael and said, you know, you feel like home to me. And, you know, and then Saru and the Burn Baby and, you know, you know, along with Adira and Stamets, and I think they just do a very good job of saying, you know, we all can choose our family, right? The whole Saru having them all around the dinner table, that was a disaster.
like my family dinners as a kid.
Absolutely. Right.
That was the most realistic thing to happen.
That was so real.
Yeah.
You know, it was so real. And so this is my favorite kind of theme that I think they got mostly right. Right. Yeah.
Well, Trevor disagrees. Trevor, it would be my honor to hear your disagreement.
Bless you. I wish I could. I think my biggest struggle is the timing. Mm. I think my biggest struggle is how we go from meeting this person to suddenly this person is part of this family. It just seems very, very rushed. But it's still beautiful.
Yeah, I agree. Trevor, you seem to have frozen on screen, but we can still hear you.
They took you out. It's not flattering either.
No,
oh, no,
not your best.
You look mid sneeze. There we go. Bye.
Yeah, everybody needs to update their avatar on here. Let's all twain.
Oh, twaining. Oh,
I can't twain.
No, nor should you. Sorry, Joanne. That was weird. No. Woo! I know the history. I apologize.
Yeah, I'm like, I cannot, sir. Problematic.
Yeah. Oof. Oh.
Ta-da-da, welcome back. Yeah.
We should talk about that in another salon for sure. Yeah, Madame Ganon.
Madame Ganon.
Oh, Trevor, it's still bad. Keep trying. We're gonna maybe forge ahead. I want to keep talking about this theme of chosen family, because I agree with y'all. I think it's something that Discovery does well, particularly here. Let me help you out, Trevor, and just put this up. I included this image of Owoshikun and Burnham for a reason. The chosen family theme isn't just for the queers, right? We've got it especially with Stamets, Culber, Adira, and Gray, but the whole Discovery crew is really a chosen family. From the leap forward, a bunch of people deciding, no, Michael, we're going with you. In that beautiful moment, we've talked about Detmer and Owoshikun, Bryce and Reese and Christopher, Tilly. God, I love Tilly. They are a chosen family in so many ways with Tilly and Michael. But this image, especially for me, was really powerful. Watching, like, I think a lot of people in Discovery are underutilized, because that's not the route that this particular show is going. They've got a main cast. The bridge crew of this series are not the main cast. This is not a formulaic Star Trek show. We know that. But of all of them, I think in particular, Owoshikun, the moments that she has gotten have been so powerful, from the episode in season two when she was part of the landing party, but especially in seasons three when she was saving the dots and saved by the dots, to season four. This moment with Michael, like I said this last week on the salon about Michael taking the chair, this image is incredibly powerful to me. But as a white man, I know that I cannot fully understand what kind of power this is for folks who are not usually seeing this depicted in media. And I think it's an important aspect as we're talking about queer representation in media as well. You know, being able to see yourself in a medium that is dominated still in 2024 by straight white men, and the freaking out every time they see a show that isn't centered on them, particularly in a franchise, the Star Trek community, the Star Wars community, a lot of fandoms, unfortunately, have a lot of sexism and racism embedded in their DNA, sadly. And it is antithetical to the content that they claim to love and the arts that they claim to love. And that's something that I love about Discovery is how, trying to think of how to say it, like the chosen family aspect of Discovery isn't just the queer chosen family. It's broader than that.
It's all of them. Yeah.
Yeah. It's all
when, even in universe, when so many of the cultures where family of origin is so important, son of, daughter of, house mm-hmm. of, for Discovery to kind of turn around and say, you know, we're, you know, I choose my house, my honor's my own, to quote Alexander. You know,
okay.
Really, yeah, I know. That was probably a bridge too far. But you know, but I think it's really powerful to say, you know, to demonstrate that there is honor, there is truth, there is love, right? Mm-hmm. In our families of choice, that are equal, that are just as valid as, you know, our matrilineal or patrilineal houses. Yeah. Just like I said, I think they do it better than most.
Yeah. And I will say the execution of some of these things can get wonky. You know, we've talked about Adira coming out as non-binary. Having rewatched it recently for our regular Salon episodes, I'm with Trevor. It felt very much like it wasn't a forced coming out for the sake of today's audience. It felt like that when I first watched it for sure. But on rewatch, I was like, oh, they're coming to this realization in real time themselves, and they're wanting to have this conversation for the first time. I also felt like I'm realizing on rewatch that part of what I'm coming up against with Adira is I find them slightly annoying in their awkwardness and buzz cut because I was an awkward kid with a buzz cut. And like, oh, okay, I'm projecting a little bit here. It is a little wonky. The execution is a little rough. The relationship with Adira and Gray, I think there's a lot of beautiful things in there. I think the execution got a little wonky in a couple of places. I think they moved in the right direction. Not having so many. I'm trying to think of a delicate way of putting this. I think it was right to focus more on Adira's story rather than have Gray stay, and then there's another character that you need to give screen time to and story to. Like the whole arc of that character, I felt was lovely and ran its course. And I'm glad that going into season five, we've got the opportunity to focus on the core cast that we have, and plus some new characters for the adventure that we're going to have in season five. That said, depicting it in Star Trek, beautiful, important. I'm glad they did it. Mm-hmm. It's important, and it's something that I know meant a lot to a lot of people. Like, it meant a lot to me, even as a cis white man who happens to be gay. As a gay man, I'm like, oh, this is powerful. This is part of my community. But for those who are trans, who are non-binary, finally being able to see that story, not in an allegory, but in actuality on Star Trek, is powerful and beautiful.
Also, just as a message for young queer people, it's these two individuals that clearly loved each other very, very much with respect to Gray and Adira, their paths are different. One has dreams of doing something. One has dreams of doing something else. Those dreams don't happen in the same geography or the same place. So it's okay for them to love each other, but maybe take different paths. For Gray to go to the Trill homeworld and for Adira to continue on Discovery. I think that's a powerful message for queer people who find each other when they're young and sometimes make silly decisions about where they're going to go to school or what job the other one takes. If your path is meant to be taken together, it will be taken together. And if it isn't, you don't have to be in the same physical space to do what's best for each of you.
If we're going to talk about their relationship, I try not to speak to the trans and non-binary experience because I am neither of those things, but I appreciate their relationship for being one that is in a way born of trauma. It was an accident. We know my dog. That it was born of trauma, but it has their relationship does not end as such. They have parted ways, but there's still a love for each other, and it does feel like there's hope for our relationships. That it doesn't mean that what it ends because your partner died. Like it seemed like their relationship progressed, and they went off on two different paths, and that's beautiful. Yeah. And that's the kind of thing that I want. I think is better. And I agree that some of the execution is wonky. I don't know if the writers are trans or non-binary. I might need to do research, but it does. Sometimes it does feel like a cis heterosexual person sometimes writing for characters that are trans and non-binary who might have friends who are but are not of that experience, which I can't say to entirely. But it, like I said, it does feel like this is 10 years too late. Mm-hmm. It does feel like this is of a time. But I think this moves the needle forward. And I think we're at a point where I think Star Trek can do something very current in terms of queer representation and do it in a way where it's bold and where it's courageous and where it's brave and where it does it, where it normalizes these experiences, because they should be, because it's normal for me. I'm not doing anything that I feel like is out of normality. Like, I am doing things that are very normal, and I just want other people to not accept it, but to just fucking move on. Like, this is the least of your fucking worries, bro. Like, right. Please. But, like, I just want to go to brunch. Like, leave me alone. Fuck.
And I think that's... I was just going to say, as queer people, at least for me, and I like to share this with anybody else that wants to steal it and run with it, I think it's really, really important that in the queer community, we live our lives in such a way where we can look at the people that came before us and say thank you, and to the people that come after us and say you're welcome. And so either for their characters or simply for being actors who are openly queer and represented in Star Trek Discovery, for Anthony, Wilson, Blue, Ian, Tig, Mary, and Emily, we should say thank you.
Yes, yes. Y'all, we're coming to the conclusion of our time together for this salon landing party / away team, depending on what era we're in. One last thing, I was going to make a joke about the most progressive thing that Discovery has done, but like I don't want to ruin what I actually want to talk about with this. Gays can be villains too. Surprise! Tarka was gay, or was he? I don't want to end on a rough note, but woof. I'm rewatching season 4 for our salon this coming Thursday, or if you're watching this live yesterday at Salon Trek here on YouTube. Just say he's gay. Just have them kiss, like, or make it very clear, like we were talking about with Kayla and Joanne. Make it very clear, like, no, like this is the first intimate two male friendship, platonic, that we are seeing in Star Trek. It is a deeper friendship than we've ever seen. Make it explicit. It felt very like
they just happened to cuddle.
Yeah, like like,
I mean, he's willing to blow up a universe to get back to this person.
Like that's
he comes
that,
really good.
And listen,
if this character was in season 1, if let's fuck with the timeline. If this character was in season 1, this character would have been played by Charles Nelson Reilly. Like, he would have been the gayest thing we've ever seen. Yeah. And like, they would have been like, this is a gay villain, look at him. And like, I do feel like that this is a point where I feel like we're too vague. Like, thank you. Where I feel like the character, they should have more explicitly said, hey, gays can be villains too. I believe in gay marriage, but I also believe in gay divorce. Like,
because listen, be villains too. Like, we're dramatic. If he had actually said, I'm trying to get to that good dick, I would have been like, okay, yes, let's blow up the 10C. Let's get you there. But that's not like what happened. For that.
I feel like you wrote that joke and you were waiting to use it.
I said it on Twitter yesterday and then it just reoccurred to me naturally. But sure. Yes, it was not, it wasn't complete. I wasn't trying to use it today, but I remembered it now in the moment. It was not that spontaneous, though.
Drag her. Sure.
Yes, drag me. It's fine. Speaking of dragging me, Trevor, what's our tally for this away team mission?
Shall I drag us across the finish line?
Yes.
Oh, God.
5 problematic gay alerts. We had 2 canon alerts, because I consider headcanon alerts canon alerts. 1 problematic ally alert. Go ahead, Joanne. 1,031 bonus points to Will for incorporating Tuscan design into queer disco conversation. An additional 20 bonus points to Will for accepting his heterosexual relatives. 200 bonus points to Joanne for endless Drag Race knowledge that is always relevant during all of our conversations. And last but not least, 1,000,000 bonus points to the crew at Strange New Pod for giving us this great playground to celebrate disco.
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you, Strange New Pod. Thank you, Dura Sisters. Thank you to all of the podcasts participating, all of the audiences. For those watching, please do subscribe at Salon Trek on YouTube. Follow us on Twitter and Blue Sky at USS Salon. We would love to have you join us in our chats on Thursday evenings at 6:30 p.m. Pacific, starting next week. We are talking about new episodes of Star Trek Discovery. Season 5 will have premiered, and on Thursday, April 4th, we'll be talking about the first 2 episodes, because they're dropping both of them that first day. So let me just say, cheers, queers. Thank you all very much for joining us at Gay Panic at the Disco. And as always, may you all live long and prosper. Thank you.